I'm Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor of Penn State Barron, and welcome to Barron Talks. My guest today is one of our students, Claire Paratano. And Claire is well known here on campus. You're going to graduate this May with a degree in political science, so welcome to the show, Claire. Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Well, appreciate you joining us. As I said, you're known to many here on campus because you're involved in so many different activities, and that's truly a compliment to you. You're Vice President of the Student Government Association, resident assistant, much more. We're going to have a nice conversation today. So again, welcome here. Why don't we just start with Claire. Tell us what brought you here to Penn State Barron.
Yeah, so I grew up on this campus. You know, I rode a bike without training wheels for the first time in the Junker gym. I drove a car for the first time in the Junker parking lot, graduated high school in Junker, and that's because of my parents, who both are faculty and staff members here. And yeah, I've always liked being here. It's been like a second home.
Yeah. So you were comfortable coming here.
Yeah.
You didn't
feel like you had
you didn't feel like you had to go somewhere else.
No. Yeah.
Well, and if, as we all know, and I'll say, you know, your mother is our our registrar, and your father is our soccer coach. So, and you know, my children also have experiences too. The one that you brought up, I taught them how to drive cars here on campus too. Yeah. You come to the parking lot, so that's how you ended up here, and you've done a lot. So it seems like it's the right fit.
It definitely has been the right fit. Yeah, it just felt right.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, you're studying political science with a focus on international relations. Why'd you end up in that field?
I think for a while I wanted to do American politics, and then as you know, I took one of the intro levels to international relations, and it stuck with me. It's so fascinating to see how countries can work together and form those different dialogues, especially in organizations right now that you're hearing a lot about, like NATO and the European Union. They do so much in terms of policies, and they affect so much more than just what I personally feel like, just one country, just one American politics.
It gets, you know, complicated, and there are reasons why there are all these treaties and complicated agreements. And, you know, of course, NATO has taken a front and center role, and a lot of people thought, geez, NATO is a dying organization. So have studied NATO, and do you have any understanding of that? You know, do you have a... Have you looked at the NATO treaty and how it's impacted the Ukraine-Russian conflict?
You know, I haven't studied NATO in a class. However, a few years back, I did model NATO. It's kind of like model United Nations, but instead it was model NATO. And that was fascinating. I didn't speak much in this conference, but I learned so much. And it's definitely so important, and you don't hear a lot about it, and that's how a lot of these international organizations are. You don't hear about them, but they do so much behind the scenes. In terms of what's happening right now, I've also learned so much.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's difficult to watch, but
it is.
We're seeing, you know, an international crisis play out in front of us. Was there a particular course that influenced you, that made you go into political science, or a set of courses?
I definitely loved all of Dr. Robert Spiel's courses. He's definitely made me the most confident in my decision to continue studying political science. And then there was also a summer course I took. It was a Maymester course, and it was the political implications of Brexit. And that was with Dr. Shushko Harned and Dr. Harbin.
Oh, yeah.
And that was right as, you know, COVID was happening, and we were supposed to go over to England to meet with other schools and delegates, but we did it all on Zoom. But that was still, I think, I don't want to say life-changing, but it changed my career, my higher education.
Well, I will call that life-changing.
It definitely encouraged me to go with the international relations track.
Yeah. Well, maybe later in life you'll have even, you know, a different perspective on it. But as you mentioned, you know, all of our political science faculty really engaged with our students. Hear so many stories like yours, and you get to see what's happening in the world. So they influence a lot of students, and you know, there are a lot of interesting careers in political science. What are you thinking about after you graduate?
That's a great question. I am still exploring all of my options in September, I will be starting a grad school program for my master's degree in, it's a long name. It's an international conflict and security. So it's essentially the study of war and the causes of it and negotiation strategies. And with that, I'll also be studying a second degree in human rights law. And it's so funny because I didn't plan on this with Ukraine happening. I chose this before, and then and then all of this happened. So I would like to work for an organization like NATO or the United Nations or something of the sort.
Well, where are you going to graduate school?
In Brussels, Belgium.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'll be right down the road from NATO.
So how did you make the connection to Brussels, Belgium? How did you find where you were going?
You know, I had been looking at schools mainly in the UK. And there is a university in England called University of Kent. Not Kent like what we have, you know, an hour away, but it's a different Kent. And they have kind of similar to Bear, and they have another campus in Brussels, Belgium that's just for international relations topics. And it just, it was small enough, you know, I like a small classroom setting, and it was also, I immediately liked the idea of being in Brussels because of how international it is and how, like, if you're studying international relations, I think Brussels is a really good place to be.
Absolutely. That's where you're at the center of what's happening there.
Yeah.
So as you think beyond that, it sounds to me like you're interested in policy and applying policy. And is that the direction you think you want to go, which means you could find a career in government? You might go into law. Mm-hmm. Do you have political aspirations, studying political scientists? Do you want to run for office?
I don't see myself running for office. I do see myself working one day behind someone who is running for office. Maybe not an American position, but someone who works for NATO or the EU. I love the idea of working behind the scenes on things. I think you see, so when you look at these pictures of people in NATO, you see all the world leaders, but there's so much that happens behind
the scenes.
Them. They do so little themselves. And they have a whole team of people, you know, guiding them and instructing them. And I would love the idea of doing that. However, I'm not decided yet. I'm going to definitely keep an open mind when it comes to future careers.
Well, you've got a, you know, a long runway ahead of you.
And yeah.
I think if you start to worry too much about exactly what you're
going
to
absolutely.
Do, right? So
you've
got a great next step. It sounds like it's going to be a tremendous experience. But it's not the first time you've lived overseas, is it?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not. I lived in Normandy, France for a year during my junior year of high school through a program called AFS. And it was great. I learned a lot. It was very hard. And I think I'll definitely have an easier adjustment in September.
Than you did
because
that.
Because I have had that experience of being away and living on my own a bit and being more independent. And with the language barriers, too.
Yeah.
I'm ready to put
junior year in high school. That's a pretty gutsy thing to do.
Yeah. It was an interesting conversation with my parents. It took them a while to realize I was serious
that
about
you were
it.
Going to go.
I always come up with these crazy ideas, and I never follow through with them. But this one, I was sticking with it. But I think it was really interesting to see the high school, like to see how French students and European students live and the differences between how American students are. There's such a difference.
So,
it's crazy.
So what are the differences?
I think French students, and I don't want to speak for all European countries, but I know that they are very similar in their ways of life, but they don't put much of an emphasis on extracurricular activities. And they also value families and friendships more than they do kind of the other aspects, so like their grades, their extracurriculars, and their sports. And I think that taught me a lot about kind of taking a step back and focusing. They know that there's a stereotype that, the French and Italians, they don't work at all. But I think we could learn a thing or two from that.
Sure.
They value the important things of, you know, those relationships more so than they do sitting in a classroom.
Yeah. The, every culture is different. And I don't have great experience in France, although I've been there and mm-hmm. worked with some French companies, and they mm-hmm. work hard, you know. Mm-hmm. But there are different values. Like the idea, for example, in the U.S., we'll sit at our desk and eat lunch.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? That's a big no-no, right?
French, well, they will go home. They'll take the 20-minute walk home and 20-minute walk back to school just to eat lunch with their families so that everyone will meet.
Yeah, it's important. They have that family time. Yeah. And the idea that you would sit alone and have a sandwich in front of your computer is... probably, you know, mm-hmm. a good thing that they don't do that. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. when you came back to the United States, so mm-hmm. I lived overseas for a while as mm-hmm. well. I'm just curious, what was it like when you land in back here in Erie, Pennsylvania, and you look around? Yeah. What's your reaction?
Reverse culture shock is definitely a real thing. I think coming back to Erie at first felt kind of like a downer, especially in Little Harbor Creek.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I also got to see people I hadn't seen in a long time, and I got to talk about my year, and that was really nice. I knew the second that I kind of got home that I wanted to go back to Europe, though. I knew that.
That was where you were going.
Yeah,
to be.
I knew. You know, I think I became so attached to that way of life and to the people I met. So yeah, and I also kind of struggled adjusting back to fully talking in English. I was dreaming in French. I was doing my entire school in French. And I remember I was unloading the dishwasher one day, and I was just kind of talking out loud. I was home alone, and I couldn't remember the word for knife and fork.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell you what that was in English.
So did you start studying French when you were in high school, and that's how you'd, or it was the immersive experience where you really learned French?
Yeah, I don't think in high school, at least, you can learn a lot. I did take French 1 and 2 in high school, but it doesn't get you very far when you're going to an actual country. So most of the French I learned was from when I lived there.
So you're fluent, you would say.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I would say.
And how do you continue to remain fluent? Do you speak to people? Do you remain in contact and have regular conversations?
Yeah, I do have a few friends that I talk with quite often. However, that's only through most of the time text. I would say if I had to have a conversation right now, I would be a bit rusty. My accent isn't there most of the time now. It's definitely hard to keep up with.
Did people think you had an American accent, or did they?
At first, then, you know, the biggest test with a language is going to any major city in that country. So for me, it was Paris, and testing it out and trying to order something in French, and if they don't speak to you in English back, that's how you know you're
good. Well.
Yeah, because most of the time in like Rome and Paris, they'll just they can smell you if you're American, and they don't want to be bothered to talk to you in their language, so they'll just answer in English. So the last few times, you know, I think I was good. They didn't talk to me in English.
So that's a real compliment.
I think that's the test.
You know, when I was in France and in Paris. Of course, I didn't speak any French, but I'd heard that, you were just going to have all this difficult time. I found everyone was so friendly. They mm-hmm. just, you know, I started speaking in English, and of course, I was just trying to get to the subway and order food and the like, and it all worked out perfectly fine. I'd like to go back to when you came back to the U.S. Everything looks a lot larger, doesn't it?
Yep. Portion sizes, buildings, everything.
Buildings,
roads.
Mm-hmm, yeah, cars. It's amazing how
how
different that part of it feels. Yeah. Let's switch back to your experience here at Parend. You've run for office here, though. You may not run for political office, but you ran for Student Government Association. You're the vice president mm-hmm. of SGA.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a bit about what made you run for the position in SGA.
I think it was a matter of that was the next step I wanted to take. As you know, I had been there for 2 years, and then our president, Dylan Free, asked me to be his running mate, and I hadn't thought of the idea of running for an e-board position before that. And then, you know, as I thought about it more, like, yeah, that could be really good. And I think the main reason I wanted to hold this position was just to listen mm-hmm. to people, to listen to opinions and feelings, and do whatever I could on a student level to see that impact.
So what are the big issues you've taken on?
Me personally, is that what you were?
Yeah, you know, you and you know SGA, you and the president together. Yeah. I'm sure it's complicated, but
Dylan and I have kind of started focusing on different issues because the president of SGA mostly focuses on faculty and staff relations, whereas the vice president is within SGA and on a student level. So I work a lot with our cabinet on their projects. Our biggest one this semester has been an academic advising survey. A lot of issues that are brought to the Student Government Association are about advising, and that I'm not graduating on time because I had a miscommunication or I didn't get to my advisor on time and vice versa. So we really just wanted to create a survey. That this started under our previous president, Chris Butler,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of finished it up. And it's just to get a feel out of how people are feeling about their advising experiences. And that's something I've been working with our academic affairs secretary on. Another thing is a little smaller project, but our commuter affairs secretary Jasmine and I are getting therapy dogs on campus for the week before finals.
Oh, very nice.
Little things like that are what really, I think, make an impression on the campus rather as like these big projects. I like the day-to-day aspect.
So if I go back to the advising mm-hmm. survey, have you administered it?
Not yet. We're still kind of wrapping the actual questions up. We've been working with Clark from Student Leadership and Involvement, and we're just finishing up the last bits in Qualtrics.
Well, what are the things that you're hearing? Where are the areas of improvement?
Areas of improvement are basically communication from both a student perspective. You know, it's your responsibility to be reaching out to your advisor and vice versa. And a lot of times it's just, I don't know who my advisor is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to contact my advisor. I don't know what questions. I don't know what my advisor does. What, like, if I have a situation, is this something I would take to my advisor or not? And so this is very much so just a data collection. We don't aim to, like, change anything yet. We are just kind of, all we're doing is
establish a
putting
baseline.
Feelers out, seeing what people are feeling, especially students. And, yeah.
One of the things that, you know, with the survey
mm-hmm.
is you have to be careful. And you mm-hmm. I mean, you have to take your time.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Absolutely.
If you do it right, mm-hmm. you know, you'll get answers to the questions that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Something I've never been good at.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admire, you know, I really, you know, observe that to do a good survey, there's science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You plan it well. Mm-hmm. And then if you do... then you can use it next year, and you've got mm-hmm. longitudinal data. So I know I'm speaking to the choir,
yeah.
So I think you're taking the right approach
yeah.
is what I'm saying. Is take your time, get the survey right.
Yeah, this is something that was started, like I said, under Chris Butler last year, where we just did meeting after meeting with students and faculty, and we just found data, found facts, and now we're just now ready to get to this section. So it's definitely been a very long process.
Now, in this role, do a lot of students just seek you out and have questions and concerns they bring to you?
Yes and no. I think a lot of students still don't know we're here and we're here to help them. But there are a lot of students that come to us mostly through social media,
mm-hmm.
mostly through our Instagram account. And most of the time they're angry. It's only when they don't like something. It's
of course,
not,
yeah.
It's not like, it's not, they're never like, hey, I really like that you guys did this, or hey, I'm just curious about this. It's a lot of times like, why is this happening? This is all your fault, et cetera, et cetera. But either
I
way,
don't
we're
mean
happy
to. Laugh
to
at you. It's
no,
just,
no, it's
true.
It's
human nature,
it's,
right?
It's either way, we're happy to talk with them and help out however we can.
Are there any particular top issues they bring to you?
Parking,
parking?
Is a huge thing,
mm-hmm.
which. We kind of
right.
have gone in circles with parking and, like I said, advising. Another thing is, like, if there are small maintenance issues
yeah.
somewhere on campus, they'll let us know, and then we kind of carry that forward.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. There are always a lot of urban myths on campus, and I'm not saying parking
mm-hmm.
is a problem,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they don't necessarily know what Student Government Association
yeah.
is doing
yeah.
unless
yeah.
they come to the meeting. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's probably really good training for you. It's really good experience,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. It's definitely taught me how to listen and to also accept the fact that you're never going to make everyone happy. There's always going to be certain decisions that some people like, some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that Dylan and I can do is to, again, like I said, listen and make the best decision
that you can.
That we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've watched your meetings, I won't go on, and they're really well run, and,
mm-hmm.
and you make decisions as a group as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not
yeah,
just
yeah.
you.
It's
making,
not just Dylan and I, yeah.
yeah.
It's our entire Senate.
Yeah.
yeah.
Now, you've not only do we have our Student Government Association here at Barron that is very active, and I mean that as a great compliment because I've just seen it change and morph over the last, 5 years in really great ways, but there's also a larger Penn statewide group that gets together, and how does that work? How do you operate in that? And
yeah, that's called the Council of Commonwealth Student Governments. We just call it CCSG, and that's once a month. All of the Commonwealth campuses meet at University Park, and we just write legislation and we talk about things that are happening on our campuses that might be a similar issue on another campus and things like that.
Do you find that part of it valuable or more the work here at Barron?
I think they're both really important to how SGAs all across the Commonwealth operate. You learn so much from other student governments and other presidents and vice presidents and other senators even. They're all so similar, but they're also different at the same time. And it's fascinating to see such a big group of people that at the same time have the same issues.
Yeah. You get to commiserate.
Yeah.
And understanding that you're not alone.
Absolutely.
So that is really valuable.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to this, you're a resident assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And you have been a resident assistant for how long now?
This is my second year, so I'm at the end of my second year.
Which residence hall?
Trip Hall.
Trip Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a bit about Trip Hall.
Trip Hall is great. It's our newest dorm, so it's very modern, which a lot of residents like. I'm the RA for what we call a special living option. It's called Global Borders, and it's focused towards students. Any student who has an international interest, is an international student themselves, might be an international business major, wants to study abroad, anything of the sort. And it's also anyone can join our meetings. And each semester we focus on a different area of the world, and we do programs that cater to that area. We'll have speakers and food and dances. This semester we haven't been quite active, but last semester we had Hawaiian dancers come. We had an Australian cookout. It was really fun.
You've maintained it. I mean, it's really maintained through the pandemic. Not perfectly, but it...
Yeah, we've tried our best.
You've done your best.
Yeah.
Given your interest in France, have you had any French programs there?
We have not. We haven't focused on Europe, really.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you've lived there, I think, 4 years, right?
3 years, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
3 years. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a little unusual as well. So you came in and you loved it so much you stayed.
I stayed, yeah. It's a great place.
What do you do in your day-to-day resident assistant duties?
I would say the biggest RA responsibility on somewhat of a day-to-day basis is programs. Programming, we have once a month we do our individual program, and we also have one big staff-wide program. And that's, I think, the most time-consuming part of the role. And then on a day-to-day basis, you're hanging up posters, you're telling people to respect quiet hours,
dealing
stuff
with conflict.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah. This year has been pretty mild in terms of conflicts, just a few roommate disagreements here and there. But it's honestly, it's a freshman dorm, so you have to remember that they're excited, they want to make new friends and all of that, but sometimes you just have to be, hey, keep it down a little bit.
Yeah. Give them a little bit of wisdom.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can work it out. And sometimes, though, if it doesn't work out, I guess they can switch roommates. There's a process by which they can do that too, right?
Yeah, so. It's like a room swap or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can't go through this without talking about COVID and the influence of the pandemic. So, what's your perspective now that we feel like we're on the other side, we're not wearing masks, and we went through 2 years of this smack dab in the middle of your educational experience.
Right, yeah. I had one normal semester followed my freshman year, and the spring of my freshman year is when we were sent home. And I think now that we're, I hesitate to say back to normal, but it feels like that, I feel a lot more comfortable, I would say, going to classes, and it's nice to see people's faces.
Yeah.
In terms of masking, it does still feel a bit like you're missing something. I'm still getting used to the feeling of not wearing a mask. When I'm walking outside, I'll reach to take my mask off.
Reach into your pocket when you go into
like,
a building.
I definitely feel like the campus is happier as a whole, that now that we can, I guess, relax a bit more.
You know, I was speaking to a student a few weeks ago, and he started at the same time you did, mm-hmm. and his comment was, you know, it was hard to build relationships. He did the best that he could, yeah. but yeah. he said after the masks came off, it felt like he met mm-hmm. 50 new people in a week.
Yeah, and with the masks coming off, you know, we're having mostly all in-person programming now with all of the events that are happening on campus. You'll rarely see join this event on Zoom, which is really nice to just be in the presence of other people again.
Yeah.
And I think that in itself is going to encourage more students next year to be more involved than they were maybe last year or the year before.
Well, you know, it's been difficult, but like you say, the future looks bright, and mm-hmm. we'll see where we go. Well, we're coming close to the end of our time. Let me ask you this question. When you leave Barron, what are you going to miss the most about this period of your life?
Oh, it's definitely an interesting thing to think about, because I've already kind of gotten into the mindset of like, all right, you're leaving, you're done. I think the thing I'll miss most is, it sounds cliche, but the people.
Mm-hmm.
The people I met along the way. You know, like I said, faculty members that have made a big difference. And just, you know, you get into such a routine and form a connection to the people, even if they're not your best friend, but you're like, oh yeah, I'll see, it's like my boss from residence life, Caitlin. Oh yeah, I'll see, I'm going to have a meeting with Caitlin today, every Monday. And I think I'm going to miss counting on that human interaction and starting new. Like, I don't know who I'm going to see today. I don't know where I'll be. I think the routine of it and just knowing that I'll have that human connection.
Well, you'll make new friends, and
you're
always welcome to come back. You have a home here, so
and
you know us well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add before we finish up?
Nothing in particular. This has just been a great 3 years here on campus, and it's definitely made me into who I am.
Well, I'll also add for our audience, if you didn't pick this up, Claire is graduating in 3 years, not the traditional four. So not only have you done all of these things, mm-hmm. you're a super academic achiever. So you should be proud of that. And thanks for joining. This has been a great conversation. My name is Dr. Ralph Ford, and you have been listening to Barron Talks. My guest today is Claire Paratano, a graduating senior student here at Penn State Barron, graduating with a degree in political science and heading out to Brussels next year for graduate school. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.